Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. This week's podcast is brought to you by Hoosier Hempster Dispensary in New Albany, Indiana, and owners Joe and Kelly Lenny. You can find Hoosier Hempster Dispensary at HoosierHempster.com. On this week's program, we'll hear from Philip Alberti with the University of Illinois Extension. Philip will discuss the 2020 growing season, and we'll find out if things have improved for Midwest hemp growers. Philip, thanks for being on the show. We've had some unseasonably warm temperatures here in Indiana the past couple of days. How are things there in northern Illinois today?
It's been pretty cloudy and a little gloomy and a little rainy the last few days. We actually had snow up here up in northern Illinois about 2 days ago. So
wow.
It's a little bit different than what y'all are experiencing down by you.
Big contrast. So you're not going to get a final blast of warm air as far as you know?
As far as I know, nope. It's just going to keep that steady decline. Night temps are going to keep going and going. So. Well, I think we got the best of it these last few weeks.
Well, there we go. Something you guys are used to up there in northern Illinois, though.
Yeah, and you know what? I'll take it. I mean, it's we're moving here until the latter part of October, so this is kind of expected. But we had a great, a great 2 week stretch, I'd say, where the temperatures were pretty nice, allowing the hemp crops that were still in the ground to kind of continue to fill out. So. At the last few years we've had, Jason, Beggars Can't Be Choosers, I was happy with how the growing season went.
There we go. Well, let's talk about that growing season. It's great to hear a positive attitude at the end of the season. How did the farmers fare? I know this is a broad question, and we'll try to drill down as we go on here, but how did the farmers fare in Illinois, and specifically northern Illinois, this year?
Yeah, so I think growing from 2019 to 2020, we learned a lot. It was a challenging year last year, just trying to grow a crop that for a lot of growers, their first time, their first go around with hemp. And so taking the information from last year, kind of applying it to the 2020 growing season, I think that overall things went smoother, particularly for those who grew it again. I think we saw about the same amount of growers, albeit at less acreages overall for each grower. But I think the experience was a little smoother. You know, we learned things about generally which are some of the more high potential varieties that are performing a little bit better than others. We learned about row spacing practices and planting dates, all of this baseline information, which may coming into another second or third year production, depending on where you are in the region, a little bit smoother. And so, you know, it's just part of the growing pains of a new industry and a new crop. And but I think overall the experience was a little bit better for those who gave it another go in 2020.
Philip, what type of percentage do you think you had in new growers, just off the top of your head?
That's so tough. There's so many factors to say because of how the licensing is done and those who still have licenses versus who are actually going to be growing the hemp crop. You know, mm-hmm. In the state of Illinois, for example, you could have bought a three-year license, grew last year thinking you were in it for the long haul, and then still have a license for this year, but you are not growing hemp.
I see.
Until, you know, we get more official numbers, it's going to be difficult to say. My last, you know, the last word that I had heard is that we were right about the same number of growers, licensed growers, for this year that we were last year in the same ballpark, which indicates to me that, you know, we're probably going to have some that didn't grow, but we also did gain new growers. And that's even from my own experience working with them across the state.
What do you think the biggest takeaway from last year was compared to this year? The farmers that came back and grew again, a lot of them took a beating last year. What do you think the biggest thing they learned from last season was?
Tempering expectations. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. As blunt as that is, you know, we came into this industry right off the bat with these very gaudy numbers of what you can expect to return on a per acre basis. You know, numbers I won't even repeat now because of how ridiculous they are today. But basically, we had a lot of high expectations for what the profit potential was going to be. Input costs were then, you know, increased because of that. If you think you're going to make more per acre, you can spend more per acre to justify those costs. But I think coming into, you know, this year, what changed really is just, okay, let's slow down. Let's think about our production practice. Let's think about where we're going to go with this material after it's done. And do we have a buyer? If we don't, is there a way that we can hold on to this material until we can find somebody who will take it. And ultimately, I think one of the bigger things too is quality of product. This year we had, last year, 2019, we had spent a lot of time trying to grow this for yields and for these percentage points of cannabinoids, but the quality of a lot of the crop and a lot of the biomass that was being presented was poor. And that's just generally because of, you know, learning a new crop. Mm-hmm. I think this year there's been a much more focus on less acres, doing it better and producing a higher volume crop. I think that's going to be the way the industry, if you're going to go for the, for hemp, is going to be anyway, is, you know, quality, a quality product every time. But there's just a glut of all this poor material saturating the market, and it's still there today. So focusing on higher quality product is going to be how you differentiate yourself right now, I think, too.
And in that area of northern Illinois, are most of the farmers growing for CBD or fiber, or how does that break down?
It's primarily CBD. You know, we're seeing the emergence of CBG varieties, mm-hmm. Which is another cannabinoid of interest. I can speak, you know, even in our own, the Midwestern Hemp Database Project, which I'm sure we'll touch on shortly, we had a great deal of interest of CBG varieties entered into the program, which was quite interesting to see, right? We did, and that's a new one. That's right along the lines of some of these autoflower varieties that we saw emerge this year. CBG varieties were ones that we saw pop up in greater numbers. So there's a lot that's still happening, and I wouldn't be surprised if other cannabinoid, high cannabinoid varieties for CBN or something like that would develop. The more we learn about them, it's just, you know, the industry's moving a mile a minute right now, and so every day something's popping up, it seems.
And again, Philip Alberti with the University of Illinois Extension in northern Illinois. And Philip, are there certain farmers that are really taking the lead on, you talk about CBG and different products there, or different types of strains. Are certain farmers really jumping in to tackle the new ones, to experiment? Do you have a lot of enthusiasm up there for that? Or are they mostly going for the CBD and just hoping to be able to get a return on their investment?
I think it's a majority, are just sticking with the CBD because that was what is kind of taking the center stage right now, and we have more information about them. But I do have a handful of growers who are doing both. Mm-hmm. And the reason, you know, at least from speaking with them about why, is the market prices for CBG, especially at the time of planting, were substantially higher than they were for CBD, which is not a surprise. There just wasn't a supply of it, so that the costs were higher. So some of the growers were thinking, okay, maybe this will be a better crop to grow, splitting up some of their acres, maybe even just a small amount, and then even trying different varieties within that were high in CBD or high in CBG, just to try to experiment. Mm-hmm. Because we really don't know which ones are going to be the best, especially for their own system. Mm-hmm. Production system.
Now, at the University of Illinois Extension, you guys offer a consultation and assistance to growers. Was there a time, or has it hit, or was there ever a time where they were looking, let's say the growers were looking more to the university for help and consultation versus now, where maybe they're getting more information in the fields than you guys are getting there at the university, given that they're out there daily practicing?
You know, I think... that's actually a great observation. With the rush of information that came in at first, you know, we were the people that everybody was coming to get information. And you might think that by doing it, that we're getting less of those calls. But I'll tell you, Jason, not necessarily, at least in my experience, and that could be just given the cooperation that I have with other universities and other states and other projects, that, you know, we're all working on this together. And so I'm still not seeing a decrease in the amount of questions or calls that we're getting. Uh-huh. For production, especially for sale and processing, where to go with this material, which I think just goes to show how much further we still have to go in really connecting each other, developing interstate communication and interstate commerce. But definitely not. And I think a lot of that has to do with that Midwestern Hemp Database Project that we're working on. And I'm sorry I keep saying it like it's a plug, because it kind of is, Jason. Mm-hmm. But the project was across, you know, the four states. For those who don't know, it was really an opportunity for growers across the region, Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin, and Michigan, to receive discounted cannabinoid profiling in exchange for data sharing. The information would be anonymous, but basically we partnered with a private lab growers would send in their samples for cannabinoid analysis. The information would be randomized and then sent to a public database for all growers across the Midwest to be able to see. So we could compare varieties, the same varieties coming from different sources, a lot of great information. And as of now, we have 140 growers cooperated in 2020, with over 700 samples that were currently submitted. And we're going to be taking grower submissions through the remainder of the year for those who are participating to see how these products, how these varieties are performing across the region. And that's really connected us, because it's not just University of Illinois, it's University of Wisconsin-Madison, it's Michigan State University and Indiana's own Purdue University, who's really, we've all worked together to put this project together and to continue it moving forward. So, definitely not a lack of questions coming through our office.
And again, that's the Midwestern Hemp Database. Where can folks go right now to find out more information about that? Where can they dig in and get more info?
We tried to make it super simple. If you just go to Google the Midwestern Hemp Database or go.illinois.edu/hempdatabase, it will take you there. Mm-hmm. We have information on production practices such as, row spacing. We have fertility information, the varieties that were planted, and all the results from the cannabinoid experiment that's been published throughout the season. And then if growers are really interested in wanting to know what went into this project and why we're doing it, there's a bunch of information on the database explaining the project, what the growers did to contribute, and that is where we will have the link when we open this up for 2021, which will hopefully have quite a few more states, a few more universities, and a few more private laboratories partnering for 2021.
Well, that's a heck of an undertaking there. You've got four universities working with, and so is it just four states currently that you're working with the database, or like one university per state, or how is that breaking down? How are you doing that?
Great question. So, when we first started this, it came together very quickly given, all the restrictions during the pandemic and everything. And so we kind of had to rush together to put the project on. And we also had to limit how many states could participate and how many labs could participate. So why is that important? Well, the laboratory that we used, Rock River Laboratories out of Wisconsin, who is very generous and made this project happen for us, is a Wisconsin-approved laboratory, which is great for the state of Wisconsin and their growers. Mm-hmm. But for growers in other states, it doesn't necessarily compare as well as we would like. The laboratory protocols are a little different in each state. And so while this project was a great way to get a baseline, sending all the samples to the same lab, it really benefited growers in Wisconsin more than the growers in the other states. So now what we would like to do moving forward is in each state that participates, we have a corresponding land-grant institution who partners, and then a corresponding state-approved laboratory who would take the samples for that state. That way, the growers in the state are actually sending samples to the lab, the same lab that they will be sending their samples to for compliance at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of things that we learned this year, and we have a lot of great information right now, but we're hoping to, we learned a lot of how we can make it better for the growers next year. And now that we have a little bit of time, that's what we fully intend to do.
All right. Anything else, Albert, or, excuse me, anything else, Philip, that we need to cover? I know there's a lot going on right now. What else can we, what else do we have out there that's very important for the growers at the moment?
The changes in rules and regulations for each state. If you have not already, I believe the state of Indiana, Illinois, and Wisconsin, I'm not sure if Wisconsin's done that yet, but Illinois and Indiana have put together their approved plans for hemp production moving forward. And so I would highly encourage the growers to take a look at those right now and see the distinctions between the current rules that they're following and what they will be following moving forward. There's going to be some subtle distinctions, some very blatant ones, and also a lot of new definitions that I think growers are going to really, really need to understand if they're going to continue growing this crop. You'd be surprised how many growers haven't read it and don't know the fine language. And it's really important, given the high-value crop, the potential for destruction, that you really need to make sure you pay attention to these changes and follow the guidelines to a T. for a successful crop.
And have Illinois farmers, specifically the northern Illinois farmers, have they found buyers this year for their crops? Did they do better this year than last year in that regard?
It's really hit or miss depending on, you know, the quality and the type. We have some growers who are harvesting just for biomass, and some who are doing smokable flour, mm-hmm. and some who are trying to do a combination of both and find different markets to get rid of their materials. So it's really kind of been all over the place. I'm still hearing stories of those who have technically sold their crop or found a buyer but haven't seen a return on it yet, and others who are very happy with the relationship that they're developing. It just goes to show how early in the development of this industry we are, and that's going to be a huge part, I think, of how this industry moves forward, is not only all the research that we're doing in the field and the growing of the crop, but where do we go after it? Where does the processing, manufacturing, all that type of stuff? It really needs to come together, and we still got a ways to go.
And one final thing I'll leave you with here, Philip. You mentioned the production systems. How has that really grown and the knowledge and technology of the production system in general over the last year?
Well, we don't have any insecticides or herbicides, pesticides labeled for this crop, so growers got to get inventive on how we're maintaining that. Is that by picking a highly productive field, maybe one that you didn't necessarily want to put into hemp, but is a very highly productive field with low weed pressure, or low insect, a low history of disease and insect pressure, because there's no weed control. Are you using cover crops or plastic culture, irrigation systems? There's all these types of strategies that growers are trying to implement to reduce the inputs for any because they don't have an option to use them. Mm-hmm. So also row spacing is probably one of the ones I don't think growers thought about the most was, you know, row spacing and plant spacing. So the distance between the rows and then also the distance between the plants in the rows, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. These are plants that will take up the space of the container that they're in. If you don't give them enough room, you will not be able to walk through mm-hmm. the rows, which means harvest will be a pain when that time mm-hmm. comes. So mm-hmm. all these different ways about thinking about how to work smarter and not harder, ways to make your job easier, will ultimately, in many cases, impact your profitability at the end of the season when growing something like hemp.
Well, Philip, we certainly do appreciate everything you're doing there to help the growers, as well as the University of Illinois Extension and the other universities in the area as well, in the Quad State area there that you're working with. And hopefully that will expand so you can get that database growing. And Philip, anything else that we need to hit on? We've got some great information today, and I know there's more out there that we could probably drill into, but anything else that we need to cover today?
The last thing I'll say really is that if you do go to the database and you look at it and you think it's a little daunting and are thinking, what am I going to do with all this information? I hope you all can rest assured that once we get all the data, we're going to clean it up, put it into summary reports, and make it a little easier for the growers to actually use the information that's available. We have a ton of it. It's going to be useful, but right now we need to find the best way to make it useful to our growers, and that also comes with letting me know what I can do better. We put this together in a very short period of time. We expect a lot of things to change on the data visualization software front moving forward, but comments, suggestions, and participation from growers is highly encouraged, and if you are interested, keep an eye on that database webpage next year when we start taking applications for 2021.
Fantastic. Philip Alberti, University of Illinois Extension. Philip, every time we have you on, it gets better and better, so we look forward to getting you back on here again in the future.
Thanks so much, Jason. Anytime.
All right. Take care, Philip. And that's going to do it for this week's show. This week's podcast is brought to you by Hoosier Hempster Dispensary in New Albany, Indiana, and owners Joe and Kelly Lenny. You can find Hoosier Hempster Dispensary at HoosierHempster.com. If you'd like more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, please go to our website, MidwestHempCouncil.com, and find out how you can get involved, volunteer, and become a member. Thanks again for tuning in, and remember to tell a friend about the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. We'll see you next time. So long, everybody.